Hey everybody, welcome. We've got another edition of the Fantasy Alarm NASCAR DFS podcast. I am Dan Malin. I am joined by the FSWA two-time NASCAR DFS, or just in general, Fantasy Sports Writer of the Year, Matt Sells. Matt, how are we on this late Thursday night, early Friday morning for me?
Yeah, it's early Friday morning for you. It's about a quarter after midnight East Coast time. We're doing this on a Thursday because we got racing on Saturday. So we got to get the podcast out. In fact, I texted Dan earlier in the week and said, hey, when do you want to do the podcast? He said Friday night would work. And I said, well, there's a race on Saturday. He goes, that's why they pay you the big bucks. So we have a doubleheader race weekend here at Pocono. It's the first time since I think the early 70s that they've done doubleheader points paying races in the Cup Series. So that's pretty sweet. And it's not just the Cup Series, because there's truck racing at Pocono on Saturday, there's Xfinity on Sunday, and there's ARCA on Friday night. So there's five races to watch at this tricky triangle of a track.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a fun weekend. Weird schedule, because this podcast will be up on a Friday morning. I mean, you kind of added some notes in the track breakdown regarding
programming.
Yeah. So we only one podcast. We're not doing two podcasts for two races. The Xfinity playbook will still come out on Sunday. You're going to get a Saturday playbook for Cup. We don't cover trucks, but I'll be in the chat answering questions for anyone who's going to play the truck race. So Matt will be on the playbook.
Yeah. And only one track breakdown.
Yeah. Yep.
You can take what's in the track breakdown and then watch what happens on Saturday and use that to build, you know, to fill in your data there for Sunday. It just doesn't make any sense to, when we're already popping out a second Cup playbook for Sunday's race, it doesn't make any sense to flood people with another track breakdown for no particular reason.
Right. And there will also be two example lineups for Saturday and then Sunday's race as well.
Yes. And by the way, for those of you that are listening, Sunday's DK salaries are up. As of the recording of this podcast, they are up for both Saturday and Sunday. They waited until after the qualifying field was set on Thursday night, which was a little bit obnoxious. We'll delve into that a little bit more as we get into the podcast. But they also have Sunday's salaries up, so it'll be interesting. I wouldn't go ahead and lock in your lineups for Sunday until after Saturday's race, because the starting lineup for Sunday's race gets set by the finish positions in Saturday's race. And if a guy happens to crash out or goes to a backup car or something, then that changes where he's starting from, and that'll change his value. So I would simply wait. You can reserve those contests if you want to for Sunday, but I would not fill out lineups just yet.
Yeah. All right, so we'll talk a little bit of the track first. It is the Tricky Triangle, no fans in attendance per just Pennsylvania governing rules given the state of the country and the world right now. Three turns. All turns are banked at a different degree, correct?
Yes, so, and they are all modeled after different
tracks.
Yeah. So turn one is the steepest banked turn at 14 degrees. It's modeled after Old Trenton Speedway there in, I believe it's Trenton, New Jersey. Not, other Trentons are not ringing any bells. So it's banked at 14 degrees. It's the steepest
one. The only
one.
Trenton I know.
Yeah. Then turn two, which is also known as the tunnel turn. The reason it's called the tunnel turn is because the tunnel to enter the infield goes under turn two, so they call it the tunnel turn. That one is banked at 9 degrees, and it's a very sharp, almost 90-degree turn, basically. And that's based off of Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which, coincidentally, they'll be racing at next weekend. And then the third corner is also the widest one. It's like a sweeping corner. It's banked at 6 degrees. It's based off the old Milwaukee Mile. So, yeah, it's a very interesting track with only three corners. It also has the two longest straightaways in the Cup schedule. The straightaway, the front stretch at Pocono is remarkably long. And then what's known as Long Pond Straightaway, because there's a pond on the other side of the straightaway known as Long Pond. So there you go. That's how it's named. That one is the second longest straightaway in the Cup schedule, and that one goes between turns one and turn two. And then there's basically like a little bit of a short shoot there between turn two and three.
Yeah.
It's also a very wide racing surface. Restarts here are nuts because you can legitimately go seven wide into turn one. Not that it's recommended. Doesn't usually work out very well for people. But restarts are crazy. You'll see a whole lot of fanning out as they go down the front stretch there. There will be traction compound in all three corners this week. Saw that tweeted out today. So that should help widen the track a little bit too.
All right. Now, what kind of racing can we expect on Saturday and Sunday? Like, what kind of aero package are we getting? I know with last week with Talladega, you know, we normally anticipate a lot more wrecks. But, you know, for the most part, it was a clean race. A lot of people, there was some speculation that just the aero package in general kind of decreased the likelihood that we were going to see wrecks. Now, we saw two-ish on the very final lap of the race.
Well, we did see Chase Elliott spin out in the middle there.
What can we expect with Pocono this week? And, you know, it's fewer laps than we're normally used to seeing with Pocono. Same thing for Xfinity. But what should we expect? Is this going to be a good race to target, like a laps-led dominator, a guy that can possibly go out and get 30, 40 laps? How much passing are we going to see? Like, what should we expect?
So it's kind of a, not to use the word tricky again, but, you know, it's kind of a tricky track for passing, as wide as it is and as long as it is. This aero package has not done this track any favors. It tends to be a track where track position is very important. So running up front, you tend to be able to hold on to it fairly well. Now, I will say this. That is based off of guys having practiced at the track, and that is based off of guys actually having run qualifying laps to earn the pole position, as opposed to what we have now, which is random draw and then, you know, show up and race in what you got and hope you set it up the right way. But typically speaking, in terms of laps led dominators, we have to adjust that a little bit because a normal race here is 160 laps. Saturday's race will be 130 laps, or 325 miles. And then Sunday's race is going to be a whole whopping 10 laps further, which is, you know, going to equal the 350 miles for Sunday's race. So in terms of laps led dominators, you know, could you see one car lead about half the laps? You could. That's certainly possible. But I kind of foresee it being spread out a little bit more on Saturday than we're used to seeing because the shorter distance and also nobody's practiced here yet. So yeah. I'm not sure that everybody's going to have their car fully dialed in. So, you know, with that being said, typically there's, you know, a handful of guys that move up in double-digit positions for place differential guys. And then there's usually, you know, it's the laps led are split between, you know, three, four, five guys in some cases. There have been races in the last five races here where you've had at least one driver lead 70-plus laps of 160. So you're going to want a guy you think can go and lead some laps, and then you're going to want to fill it in with place differentials guys.
Awesome. You want to dive into the driver pool unless we have anything else we need to discuss?
Just real quick, we touched on it earlier that the, you know, don't set your lineups in for Sunday until Saturday's race ends. That's because they're inverting the top 20 finishing positions from Saturday's race to start Sunday's race. So, you know, we saw this already at Darlington earlier this year and Charlotte when they raced back-to-back races there that were like 4 days apart. So if the guy who wins on Saturday, they'll start 20th on Sunday, and the guy that finishes 20th on Saturday will start on the pole on Sunday. Anybody 21st or further back where they finish on Saturday, that's where they'll start on Sunday.
Awesome.
So just keep that in mind in terms of some place differential upside and who becomes chalkier and whatnot. But that's the only other real programming note that I've got.
Cool. We'll just dive right in. not so much going to cover a team as I am just a manufacturer. Might as well just start with Toyota because the most expensive driver is a Toyota, and it is, oddly enough, rookie Christopher Bell. Starting 36th, DK loves to strip us of fun and value, and so they priced him way up.
Yep, we saw this when JJ and Clint Bowyer started dead last at, the second Darlington race?
Something like that.
Or second Charlotte race, something like that. We saw they be priced way up. So I can't say that I was shocked when I saw the salaries come out and Christopher Bell was 11-1 on DK. He's still reasonable on FanDuel at $8,000. Starting 36, he's obviously got place differential upside. He's done really well here in the Xfinity series. Keep in mind, the Xfinity only runs, 90 laps here, right, Dan?
This weekend. Typically, it's like 110, but this weekend they're only running 90.
Okay, so typically it's 110, and typically the Cup race is 160. So there is an extra 50 laps more. It's not that strenuous of a track because they took the shifting out of the cars now. They don't even have to worry about shifting, really. It's just hold it wide open as long as you can. He's worth a play more so on FanDuel than DK. It's just a value thing for me on DK.
Now, do you worry that he can't really get to 5X value? Because from where he's starting, if he doesn't get any laps led or any fastest laps, he basically needs to finish in the top 12 for 5X value.
Yeah, see, now I feel like this is deja vu because we've had this conversation about Christopher Bell before when he was starting further back and they priced him up on DK the last time. And we were debating.
But he's never been this high.
Yeah, no, he's never been this high. I think previously when we were debating it, he was like in the $9,000 range, if I'm not mistaken. It's just a tough spot. Can he get to 12th? There's a shot he can get to 12th. I have him projected to finish 18th. Does that mean that I'm right? Mm. Not necessarily. If he doesn't get any fastest laps or laps led, it's going to be, so at Homestead, he was priced at $9,300. He was starting 36th. And we had this debate, could he pay that value off? And it turned out that he did. Now, he got all the way up to 8th in that instance. And then at Talladega, he started 35th. He was priced at $9,700, only got to 29th. So he didn't pay value there. So that's kind of the crapshoot you got with Christopher Bell this week.
Did he wreck out of Talladega, though?
Yeah, okay, but it's Talladega. You kind of expect wrecks to happen. I'm just saying he's gone up each of the last three races. He hit value once, he didn't hit it the next time, and now he's like $2,000 more.
All right. We'll move on to Kyle Busch. He's priced down to $9,300 on DraftKings.
Yeah, I don't understand.
You still that I don't really get. Love it. He's won here. He's done very well here. We expect him to get some laps led. I think he's starting row two at P4.
He's starting fourth. The guy has won three of the last five races at this track. He loves Pocono. He leads the field in dominator points per race in the last four races. He's got an astonishing 128.3 average rating in the last four races here, which, again, if you remember, a perfect one is 150. So, yeah. Yeah, he's pretty high up there. His average finish is 3.5, which is, I'm pretty sure, like 5.5 spots better than the next closest guy in the last four races. See, I don't begin to understand why DK priced him at 9,300. I mean, I know he doesn't have position upside, but he could go out there and lead. I think I've got him projected to lead like, I don't know, 30, 40 laps.
43 about.
If he wins the race, he's basically right there at 5X value already, not including the 3 points of position upside and not including the laps lead he would get. So,
do you have any just general concerns about him? Because he hasn't won a race yet this year. And he was hot at this time last year. And I understand it's different circumstances because we don't have practice, we don't have qualifying. But it's weird that he's priced down and he just simply hasn't won this year.
Yeah. I mean, I get that, but then there was also Martin Truex Jr. last year. Everybody was wondering what happened to him because he didn't win for a while, and then he wound up, dominating the second half of the season and, competing for another title. So, I don't have that big of a concern about Kyle Busch. The guy is Kyle Busch. There's a reason why he's won as many races as he has, and is basically considered the best cup driver out there. I mean, DK clearly has an issue with him because they priced him down to 9,300. FanDuel's got him up to 13,500.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't returned the points that we expect him return at this point, but I don't have that big of a – let me put it this way. I'm going to get real concerned if he doesn't have strong showings at Pocono and Indianapolis next week, because these are clearly his two best tracks right now in terms of wins and domination. So if he leaves both of those and he's not even come close to competing, then we'll have some serious concerns.
Okay, we will go up to his teammate. You just mentioned him, Martin Truex Jr. He's 97. He's 9,700 on DraftKings. Rolling off P11. Decent history here. Average finish of 13.5. You like that. Position differential is there for him a little bit, starting 11th. How do you feel about MTJ this week?
I feel pretty good about him. He does have a win here. We were a little heartbroken a couple of races ago. Yeah, it was the first race in 2019, the June race in 2019, when he blew his engine because he missed a shift. Now, lucky for him, they took shifting out of it, so he doesn't really have to worry about it. But last year in the July race, he started 8th and finished 3rd. So that was pretty decent showing. Didn't really lead any laps, had some fastest laps. The guy, he's done pretty well here. The win came back in, I believe, the first race of 2018. I'd rather pay down and get Kyle Busch.
Oh, I agree.
But I'm not opposed to trying to get both Truex and Kyle Busch into a lineup.
So would you rather pay $9,700 for Truex starting P11 or $8,800 for Denny Hamlin starting P3? Hamlin feels like he could be a trap this week at that price.
He does. Like, I can't read Hamlin this year, obviously, because I completely missed him on Homestead. Like, just completely whiffed on Denny Hamlin at Homestead. Now, Hamlin did win this race the last time they raced at Pocono, and he is still the active wins leader at Pocono in the Cup Series. Granted, 3 of his 4 wins here came like before they repaved the track like a decade ago, because he swept the wins in his rookie year and then won like the following year and then didn't win again until last year. I don't really fully get why he's priced down at 8,800. It seems like the JGR guys are going backwards here in pricing. I think he's a little bit more hit and miss, though, than the other two teammates we've talked about.
Yeah, like I was pretty heavy on Hamlin when he went off at Homestead. I just don't get the feeling that it's there for him this week. I'd rather
take your word on it, because you seem to be on Denny Hamlin right now, and I can't read him very well right now.
It just feels like an absolute trap. It's like they want to bait you into taking Denny Hamlin, and he could easily go out and be a laps-led dominator.
Yeah, but I'd also rather pay $9,000 and go with Ryan Blaney.
Oh, I agree with that, and we'll get to him shortly. But, I mean, the last JGR driver that we have to talk about is one guy that we've kind of avoided the last couple weeks. And
luckily, not going to be the case this week, though.
It will not be. Eric Jones, 7,100, starting P19. He's got a pretty damn good history here, too.
He does. He has 3 top fives in the last 4 races here. He is, by the way, more expensive on FanDuel at $10,000. But that's still not terrible. That's average price for a driver. That's not bad for a guy with his history here. His average finish is 9.8 in the last 4 races. In the 6 total cup races that he's run here, 5 of them have resulted in top 10s. 4 of those are top 5s. Eric Jones has been – he's almost won here twice. He got beat out just barely both of those times, so – he is a guy that I'm really looking at this week to kind of get out of the recent funk that he was in, although he almost won Talladega before he pinballed it off the wall there at the very last lap. So I think Eric Jones may, in fact, be the chalkiest JGR guy this week. on DK. I know that sounds odd considering the fact that Kyle Busch is on his team, but for a guy that's starting 19th, who's got legitimate top five upside, it's pretty hard to beat a $7,100 price tag on. So expect that Erik Jones and Kyle Busch are going to be the top two most owned dudes on JGR.
I think what I like most about Jones is that if you go back to, you know, Homestead, he had 27 of the fastest laps. At Atlanta, he had 15 of the fastest laps. So it's like he's got a fast car.
Mm-hmm. He just hasn't put it all together yet, but the speed is clearly there.
Yeah, and that whole not putting it all together never was that more prevalent at Miami when he was about seven laps shy of a really good finish, and he'd opted to pit, and he finished outside the top 20.
Yeah, which, you know, benefited a lot of us because that pit moved a bunch.
I felt like an absolute idiot for fading Jones for most of that race, and then I saw that he pit, and my heart leaped.
Yeah.
All right, so that covers the Toyota cars. Which team do you want to go to next? You want to go to Hendrick? You want to go to Penske? Penske's usually quick because it's only three drivers, and they're all pretty good.
Yeah, let's go with Penske. Get him out of the way here.
Okay, Ryan Blaney starting on the front row.
Gonna be the favorite play of Penske. We'll get that out of the way right now.
Figured as much. If you look at just the last four races, he's finally coming together after he kind of struggled at Darlington, but he's got four straight top four finishes. He won last week at Talladega. $9,000 for a guy starting P2 that can go out and lead a bunch of laps is just criminal.
Yeah, he's also won here in the past. In fact, I'm pretty sure his first cup win came at Pocono. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, that's a criminally low price tag for a guy that's starting P2, and has his history here. Now, that win is clearly the bright spot. That's not to say he hasn't done well. The other he has eight cup races here. He's won one of them. Six of the other seven, he's finished between 6th and 15th. All right, so his average finish is 11.5. He wrecked out of one of them. So, you know, we're not going to hold that against him. But, yeah, I really like Blaney this week. I think he finishes in the top five again. He's given me no reason to believe he won't, given the speed he's shown of late and where he typically runs here. So, yeah, I fully expect that Ryan Blaney is going to be the most heavily owned Penske driver of the three.
You know, we talked about when the season restarted, we talked about how fast Ryan Blaney's car looked, and he stumbled out of the gates at Darlington. Yep. But in six of the last seven races, he's finished in the top four in every race except Bristol, where I believe he wrecked, but he still had 60 laps.
Yeah, and the wreck wasn't even really like, I mean, I'm going to say it was his fault because he spun out, but he saved it. Yeah. And then Ty Dillon came and drove past and ripped the front of his car off at the end of his day. Yeah. Ty Dillon not hit him, he probably still would have been out there. I don't know where he would have finished. But, yeah, he's been an absolute stalwart up in the top five. And why they're still disrespecting him like this on DK, I don't know. But I'm going to take advantage of it.
His teammate Joey Logano, 10,400, starting sixth. We really liked Logano last week, but he's kind of been a little weird the last couple of weeks.
You want to talk about a guy who started off hot at the beginning of the year and then still hasn't really put it together since it restarted? That would be Joey Logano.
Yeah, you take away a 234-lap lead race at Martinsville, and he's not really returning the value that we want for a guy who's priced over 10K on DraftKings.
Yeah, and here he's been a bit hit and miss. I mean, three of the last four finishes, you know, he's finished between 6th and 15th, two of those in the top 10. But yeah, I mean, in his last eight races here, it just hasn't been great. There's only four finishes at 15th or better in that span. He typically goes backwards here. Not terribly high on Logano this week.
What about Kislowski? He's $500 cheaper, starting in the row right behind Logano.
I'd be more willing to invest in Kislowski right now. Just because, you know, their late race strategy has been on point, and he's just somehow always found his way back up into contention late in these races. Seems like on a weekly basis. You know, he's got three of his last four races here have been 10th or better. Two of them have been top five finishes here. In the last eight races, Kislowski has six top five finishes. at this track. Now, keep in mind his average finish is still 8.5 in that span. So that means the wrecks have really cost him in the average finish department there. But, you know, for a guy to have 6 top 5 finishes in the last 8 races, that's a pretty strong statement at a track like this.
We will bounce over to Hendrick. I talked about how their cars, before the podcast, rather, we were talking about how their cars have shown really solid long-run speed. Chase Elliott starting P5, 10,700. I think I'm off Chase this week, unless you can talk me onto him.
No, I'm kind of there with you. He's got decent history here. He's got 3 top 10 finishes in the last 4 races. But the average finish is 14.8. He typically goes backwards a few spots a race. He hasn't, if we look at values, in the last, 5 trips to Pocono, at this price point on DK, he's returned a value of 2.9. And on FanDuel, at his price point, he's returned a value of 3.4. So that's just not all that appealing. I know he still ranks best in green flag speed. Last week, obviously, Talladega wasn't great. He was on a big run, and then Logano blocked him, and that basically tore the rear half of his car off. I'm just kind of on Chase. He's got 6 top 10s in his 8 races here, so in general, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I'm just not getting a great feeling about Chase this week right now.
Neither am I. But I am getting a pretty good feeling about his teammate, Jimmy Johnson. P12, so he's starting at the bottom of the possible top 12 drivers and owners points. And he's only $9,100. And this is a guy who I feel like ownership could be lighter on. I like the price point, and I also like the potential long run speed here. He hasn't won in what feels like forever. He's got a couple. Yeah,
it's almost 110 races at this point.
Yeah, he was runner up at the Coca-Cola 600, finished 3rd at Bristol. So, he's had good races. I'm really hoping, and I'm probably not playing him in cash, but I love him in GPPs this week. Feel like this is a race that he could possibly go out. Even if he doesn't win, I'd like it if he could just get to the front and lead a few laps. I know that'll be tough with Kyle Busch and a few others starting ahead of him. But I do like Jimmy Johnson this week.
Yeah, I do too. Obviously, it takes less convincing for me to like Jimmy Johnson.
He's your favorite.
Yes, he is. He is my favorite, though. I tend to be fairly fair on the guy. I don't play biases and whatnot. So, I really do. Like him. He has a history of moving up through the field pretty well here. In the last 4 races, he's moved up about 7-8 spots a race. Now, granted, he typically has started further back than he is at this point, and it's usually easier to pass the guys 20th through 12th than it is 12th through, 5th. The Chevys have looked really fast this year, as we've commented. Hendrick also, by the way, has the most wins at Pocono in the history of the track. So that's got to count for something. Typically at Super Speedways, you look for Hendrick cars because they usually have the real good long run cars. So Jimmy Johnson is in play, as well as his teammate William Byron. I really do like Byron this week quite a bit. He's got a very good history here of moving up. And let's not forget that, we're going to play the crew chief card again because Jack Canales helped JJ get himself around this tricky track multiple times. So Byron has been really quite impressive at times this year when he's not running into the wall and flat tiring and stuff like that. So
four of his 5 last 5 races, he's finished in the top 11. The one he didn't was Atlanta, but he's putting up in those 4 races where he's finishing in the top 11. He's put up at least 46 points in each one. And if he's doing that, you're getting over 5x value for him at this price point.
Yeah. So I have no problems playing William Byron this week as a great mid-tier play. I like the price better on DK than I do on FanDuel. He's 10-4 on FanDuel. It might be a touch high. But it's also trickier to figure out the pricing on FanDuel just because of the seemingly base points that everybody gets every week.
All
right. And then rounding out Hendrick, Alex Bowman. Not all that high on Alex Bowman this week.
Is it because he's not starting eighth for the fifth straight race?
It's just because he hasn't really seemed to figure this place out just yet. You know, he is capable of running up front here. He's got a top five to his credit. That's the only finish inside the top 10 in his four races here. I get it. He was great at Auto Club earlier this year. But since then, it's been kind of, I don't know. I mean, would you say
he looked great at Charlotte, but he's just done nothing since Charlotte?
Yeah, just
the last month has been just very
just not good.
Yeah,
yeah. So I'm pretty not all that high on Bowman. If I were to rank them, I would put probably William Byron 1, Jimmy Johnson 2, Chase Elliott 3, and Bowman 4.
Interesting. Interesting. All right, good to know. Lastly, of the big four teams, I suppose, we'll go to SHR. Kevin Harvick is the most expensive at $10,100 on DraftKings. He's starting P9. Normally love to target Harvick, and I'm not saying I'm not going to in this race, but over his last three races between Martinsville, Miami, and Talladega, Talladega is kind of a wash just because it could ruin everybody's day. He's just been kind of underwhelming since his dominant race at Atlanta. What do we expect from him?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so in fairness, we kind of expected him to do what he did at Martinsville. In fact, I'm pretty sure I wrote in the playbook that he wasn't going to really lead laps. He was just going to kind of hang out in the top five, top seven.
He also had a battery
seven.
Issue as well.
He also had a battery issue, which cost him a lot of spots at the end of the race when he had to go pit for that. But, I mean, if you watch the race, he was hanging out in the top five, top seven all night, and that's basically what I expected him to do. Miami, that's a little bit of a different story. He had previously been very good at that track. You know, he was good at times. The Miami race, not great. Pocono, on the other hand, he's second in the field in dominator points per race here in the last four. He's got three top 10 finishes in the last four races, two of which were in the top five. He's got wins here. He's got seven top 10 finishes in the last eight races. Five of those are top five. So I do like Kevin Harvick quite a bit this week. And I think if you want, now it's going to be a pay up compared to Kyle Busch, but if you want one of the top two guys this week, Kevin Harvick's probably going to be the lesser owned of those top two guys, but to me, they're the top two.
All right. And Clint Bowyer, I believe he's starting P18. I'll just double-check really quick.
Yeah, I think.
So he's starting 18th, $9,500. I actually don't mind it. I mean, unless his history here is just pretty bad. But
no,
I think
his history here is pretty good. He's got a top five. He's got a couple of finishes, 11th through 15th. His average finish is 11.8 in the last four. 14th in the last eight races. So, you know, there's a little bit of place differential upside for Bowyer. Price is basically even on both sites. So, yeah, I think he might slip a little bit under the radar because, I don't know, it's people don't really associate this track with Bowyer. He tends to be a guy that is really popular for a few weeks and then tends to slide under the radar. So, yeah, I like Bowyer fine. I don't know that I would play him in cash, but I'd certainly play him in GPPs.
Agreed. Eric Almirola. Starting on the pole,
this
so he's
gets
next to
tricky.
Ryan Blaney. I loved him in Miami. I was very heavy on him. Liked him at Talladega last week. So, I mean, he's coming off back-to-back top five finishes. He's got momentum. He's priced up now to
7,300.
By
his rear bumper on Sunday at Talladega. Yeah. Monday at Talladega. This gets tricky for me this week. Specifically for this race, because we don't know what Sunday's starting order is yet, obviously. The pole sitter at Pocono has won 19% of the races that have happened at Pocono, which is 84 races at Pocono in the Cup Series. Mm-hmm. In the last five races here, the pole sitter has been the highest scoring spot DFS-wise on both sites. The problem with just going, okay, well, sure, we should just lock in Eric Almirola, because why not? You just gave me information that said he's got a 1-in-5 shot of winning, and he's been the high, that spot's the highest scoring. Well, keep in mind that typically speaking, guys are qualifying for the pole. You've seen them on track, and the fastest cars typically land the pole here, unless there's just, like, I don't know, a really bizarre qualifying. This week, it was just randomly given to him. And we've seen Eric Almirola start up front before. In fact, he was starting second for 3 straight races.
Yep.
Every time he starts in the top 10, Eric Almirola has gone backwards this year. Every time he starts outside the top 20, Eric Almirola has gone forwards this year. So what does that tell you? It tells you that he's a car that should finish in the teens or just inside the top 10. Well, if he's starting on the pole, and, you know, it's not, you know, in the last, in 2 of the last 5 races, we've seen the pole sitter here. Dan and I went over this before the podcast started, and actually 3 of the last 5 races, we've seen the pole sitter finish outside the top 5. The only reason that Kevin Harvick had a very good scoring day after finishing 9th after starting on the pole was because he led 62 laps. I do not see Eric Almirola as a guy that will lead that many laps. William Byron started on the pole and finished 6th and only led 25 laps. Ryan Blaney started on the pole and finished 7th and only led like 11 laps. I think he's much more like Byron and Blaney in that scenario than he is Kevin Harvick.
Okay, fine.
So, I mean, you can play him in GPPs. You're going to have to, because the pole sitter tends to lead laps. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be popular. Just telling you, it's not a popular cash game play this week.
All right. One guy I am kind of looking at cash games is the last SHR driver we haven't talked about. We got Cole Custer. He's 6,400. He's starting 25th. You know, I've targeted him a lot the last couple weeks for cash games. And, you know, I guess for Talladega, he returned 5x value. For Miami, he returned 6x value. But he's not really just blowing it up in our faces, really. You know, he's getting between 30 and 38 points with a 19-point effort at Martinsville. But at Atlanta, Talladega, Miami, he did pretty well. How do you feel about him starting 25th, though? I know he's right outside the top 24 in owner's points. But he gets the best possible starting spot. I was hoping to see him qualify a little bit further back.
Yeah, I was actually hoping to see him qualify where, like, Christopher Bell started, or is starting, to really boost his value. Starting 25th is all right. It clearly takes some position differential away from him.
Yeah.
Because I think I have him projected to finish 17th right now, which gives him 35 points, which puts him squarely on the, like, 5.5x value. On DK, so, I mean, I'm in on Cole Custer. I think he might be a reasonably popular play this week, depending on your tournament size. Just as a sub-7K guy who's got some nice place differential and who has returned value each of the last several races, so... also, Cole Custer's done pretty decently here in the Xfinity series, if memory serves. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with Cole Custer.
Sweet. All right, we'll get to breaking down the, I guess, smaller teams. We'll start with Chip Ganassi. Matt Kenseth is priced up at 8,600. I don't really get that. I guess it's they're just trying to... His starting spot is 20. Oh, is it?
Yeah, I mean, right, but his starting spot, but his history is also based on the fact that he was in the number 20 car,
mm-hmm.
which we've seen Eric Jones dominate in. So there's like, you know, is it him or is it the car type thing? And he is starting a little further back, so there's some place differential there. But I've been completely underwhelmed with Matt Kenseth, aside from the first race at Darlington. So if you want to take a shot at him this week, I would say Saturday's race is the race to do it.
Because if he finishes like 17th or 18th, he's going to start top 5 on Sunday.
Right. Also, you know, he's 8,600 for Sunday's race. Or is that Saturday's? Am I looking at I'm looking at Saturday's prices. Sorry, there's two slates going on here on DK at the same time, and I got confuzzled as to which
one. Yeah, we're a little surprised that DK actually released the prices for Sunday.
Yeah, I was a little shocked there, too. Kenseth is $7,900 on DK on Sunday. The reason, so yeah, if he manages to get himself into the top 20, then he finishes way up, then he starts way up front on Sunday, which is, you know, takes a bunch of value away from him. But also, there's just the endurance factor. Yes, Kenseth is a fairly fit individual, but I'd rather play him in the first game, you know, first race of a doubleheader than the second.
Okay.
It's kind of like in the NBA when you play the guy on the first night of a back-to-back instead of the second night of a back-to-back.
Okay. What about his teammate, Kurt Busch? 8,100. He's starting seventh. I'm not crazy about his history here. Average finish was 16.5. Tends to go back about 6.5 spots a race.
Yeah, I mean, he has won here. It's been a few years since he's won here. But, yeah, I mean, he's just kind of a – usually I'm a lot stronger on Kurt Busch.
I agree.
Than I am this week.
Like, we always say he's not sexy, but he's got teeth, and I don't know. It's like he's got, like
– he's got, yeah, less teeth this week than he normally does.
Like fake dentures.
Yeah, because I just – like, in order to hit value, he's going to have to move up some spots. He's probably going to have to lead a handful of laps.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably going to have to lock down, like, a top five finish, and I don't see that happening.
All right. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. starting
P14. Not intrigued.
I had a feeling. Just wanted to let our listeners know.
Just not. And the reason is, yes, I know Stenhouse has been solid the last several races. He's kept his head down. He's been quiet. Hasn't wrecked anybody. Congratulations, Ricky. but this just hasn't been his track. Previously, it's just not. He usually finishes about 22nd here in the last four races. 18th in the last eight races, so either way you cut it, tends to go a little bit backwards. And the value just hasn't really been there. Like, if we're looking at the last two races on DK, 0.9x value. Not great. Last five on DK, 2.8x value. And on FanDuel, he does the best he gets is 4.5 over the last five. So I'm just not a fan of Ricky this week.
All right. Next price driver is Bubba Wallace, starting P23, $7,700. Very tumultuous week for Bubba. Week. Yeah.
By the way, to clear stuff up, in case anybody hasn't seen this, Bob Pockers tweeted out, as well as like the entirety of NASCAR. In fact, the picture came from NASCAR. The thing that was thought to be a noose that was then thrown, like, brushed aside as the garage door pulls, so how could anybody fall for it being a noose? That thing looks like a noose. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen the picture of it, Dan.
I've seen it. The one that Pockers tweeted out, it looked like a smaller handle, but then NASCAR released a picture and it looks like it's slightly larger. I understand.
The other, thing that made it more intriguing to me is that apparently over the weekend NASCAR had every track that NASCAR at any level races at check their garage stalls for any similar looking thing. That's 1,600, almost 1,650 garage stalls that got checked. There's only 11 that use rope as garage door pull downs, and the only one that was fashioned in that style was the one that was in Bubba Wallace's garage stall at Talladega.
But wasn't there the narrative though that it was up last fall
in Paul Menard's stall? Right, but they also cleared that up, too, because they said that it was not there at the beginning of the race weekend. It was tied that way during race weekend.
Okay.
They're not sure. Now, obviously, it's not like at the end of race weekend they said, ooh, let's leave this as a noose because we know who's going to get the stall next. They had no idea who was going to get the garage stalls until the week of Talladega. However, for those people that were out there going, yeah, the guy, the crew member who found it and reported it should have known what it was because it's like common. No, it's not. That's literally the only one in the entirety of NASCAR that is tied that way. So let's you know, let's brush that off now. Bubba has said he will gladly take the embarrassment of what happened compared to it actually being a hate crime. But yeah, it's been a tumultuous week.
I don't know if there's that much embarrassment around it, though, because, like, the show of solidarity before the race was pretty cool.
No, I think he's talking about what...
Just the sheer fact that it looks like it's an egg on his face and his team's face. Yeah,
because they reported it, and it turned out to be a garage door opening device, not I hate crime. And I agree with you. I don't think it's an embarrassment, and I commend NASCAR for coming out and saying, look, we would respond to it exactly the same way every time. Right. And whatnot. But I think at this point it's got to be emotionally draining for Bubba Wallace. I just don't know how much more, like,
momentum
he can carry, because it's been going for like 3 weeks at this point. Well, and also Pocono is not all that great of a track for Bubba Wallace.
But he's got some solid momentum. He's got three straight top 15 finishes with some good position differential along the way.
Yeah. So, again, if you want to play him in GPPs... I'm not going to tell you not to. I mean, I'll probably have a little bit of exposure to him, mostly from my daughter, who sets her lineup, and that's one of her favorite drivers.
It's always so surprising, though, because Bubba is, like, consistently in this, you know, 12th to or 13th to 24th range for owner's points, and it just seems like as of late, with the exception of Miami, you know, he's just starting, like, at the very back end of those owner's points. I mean, the position differential is there for them.
Yeah, he definitely has the position upside if he can keep his run of top 15 finishes going. This just previously hasn't been his best track. I know there's more funding in RPM and whatnot, but I don't know. I'd rather play him in a GPP on Sunday, on Saturday, see how he looks, and then maybe my opinion will change of him on Sunday.
All right. How do you feel about Matt DiBenedetto, 7,600 on DraftKings?
He's 21. I actually like DiBenedetto.
Really? Because I feel like he's always like he's only like a super speedway, and I understand
this is a super speedway.
Yeah, I know.
2.5 miles. It's flat. I know. It's not what we consider to be the like. It's not the super speedway you think of, but like Michigan's considered a super speedway, and that's 0.5 mile shorter. It's also heavily banked, but. I think he's a I listed him as the contrarian play in the track breakdown because in four of the last five races here, the 21 car has gotten top 20 finishes. The only one that it missed on, they finished 21st. So, you know, would it be better if he was starting just a couple spots further back? Sure.
Yeah.
But I think... also, Matt DiBenedetto by himself has a couple of top 20 finishes here in the last four races. I think he's a contrarian play.
I'm hoping that the only reason I got super heavy on him for Martinsville is because we were in the chat and you were just talking up how much you liked Matt DiBenedetto. If that's the case on Saturday and you're feeling great about him, I'll load him into more lineups. But next, we'll talk briefly the RCR guys, Tyler Reddick, who has been everybody's favorite rookie this year. He and Austin Dillon. Reddick's 7,400. Dillon is 6,200. Dillon starting 17th. Reddick starting 15th. I think it's no secret that most people will be heavier on Tyler Reddick. What's his history like? How do you do here at Xfinity?
He's done pretty decently here in Xfinity, but then again, he was also starting closer to the front, and, you know, you got to start taking these guys with a grain of salt because obviously they're up in the Cup Series because they dominated it at Xfinity. So it shouldn't be shocking that these guys have done well here.
I mean, he looked great at Miami. He looked good at Talladega too. Like he was running towards the front for a lot of the race, just couldn't quite get to the lead.
Yeah. I mean, I think Reddick is a perfectly fine play here. Rookies have won in the past, as we alluded to with, Ryan Blaney had his first win here. Several other rookies have had their first win. Denny Hamlin swept his rookie year here. I like Tyler Reddick. I think he's a perfectly fine play. It's not going to take all that much for him to hit 5X value, given his price tags, which, by the way, I do like better on DK than FanDuel. Austin Dillon,
It's priced under his brother for the, what seems like the first time in quite a while.
By a ways, too. He's $1,000 cheaper than Ty Dillon on DK, which is kind of surprising. Austin Dillon's got a couple of top 15 finishes here in the last four races. He's got four top 15 finishes here in the last eight races. So, again, it's not like it's going to take very much for Austin Dillon to hit value. He's starting 17th. If he moves up to, like, let's say 12th, he pretty easily hits value. So, it's kind of a coin flip for me between the two of them, actually.
Between Reddick and Dillon, or Dillon and Dillon?
Between Reddick and Dillon.
Okay.
In terms of a value play, I think Austin Dillon has a better shot at hitting value than does Tyler Reddick.
Yeah, you might be right. How do you feel about Ty at 7,200, starting 34th? He hasn't really finished in the top 20 at Pocono lately, but I mean...
Yeah, he hasn't really done
great. He's got an average finish of like 25.8, and if he can get up there... I understand they're pricing him up because of his starting spot and the potential PD, but is this like a Denny Hamlin trap scenario that we could find ourselves in with Ty?
I feel like it is. I feel like he's a better play on FanDuel where he's $6,000.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, here's my argument. If you're going to spend in the low sevens on DK, wouldn't you rather have Eric Almirola or Eric Jones instead of Ty Dillon?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Almirola is $100 more and Jones is $100 less. I think I'd rather have one of those two guys than Dillon on.
Agreed. Just based on the pedigree and the equipment that they're into.
And Ty Dillon is usually one of our great PD upside guys. But, like, even that 25.8 average finish has come with a negative position differential for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'll probably skip Ty Dillon this week.
I don't know why I'm going to bother asking, but I'm going to. Daniel Suarez starting P37. He's 6,900. Nice. But his car sucks.
Car does suck. Probably going to have to pass on him again.
Yeah.
Just that car is just...
trash.
Because keep in mind, the only reason why he's making the field is because they're not running qualifying.
Yeah,
he has to qualify on speed to make these races. Ugh. Because they're not a chartered team. So,
yeah.
And he missed the Daytona 500 because of it, and that field was 43 cars.
So, all right, we're coming up on an hour, so I guess we'll kind of just breeze through the next few drives. Yeah. But I mean, who else do you? Are there any value plays that you like? I mean Ryan Newman.
I like Buescher.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, I can get behind that one.
I like Buescher. Newman is interesting to me. Let me refresh my mind as to where he is exactly starting. He's starting 13th.
Yeah, and I don't love that.
A little tough to get the value there. But I do like Buescher. He's starting 24th. He could get himself a top 20 pretty decently, and then he hits value. John Hunter Nemechek, I don't really know how to feel about him this week. I think he could do okay. I really do. Because let's keep in mind that Buescher's first win here came at Pocono.
Holy crap. You know what I just realized?
What?
We talk about Alex Bowman having four straight races starting 8th. Prior to Talladega, Nemechek had four straight races starting 18th.
That's crazy. I feel like Christopher Bell has been stuck starting 36 for the entire season.
Sort of. And you know what sucks about that is that his car is in the top 24 in owner's points. The thing is that Kenseth gets his points. Kenseth gets Kenseth's points and Kyle Larson's points. So those points combined put Kenseth in the top 24, and it bounces Christopher Bell to 25th.
Yeah, which is why he's gotten a hose 3 weeks in a row with a 36 starting spot. So Nemechek, I mean, I'm fine with him in a GPP. He's starting 20th. There's some there's some place differential there. I just don't know how to read him right now. Ryan Priest, not the biggest fan of. I know he's starting 30th. That's kind of where he's finished the last two races he's been here. Just not on him that much this week. LaJoy, again, I'll probably skip.
Really? This week. Yeah, he's doing 29th, and I know he's not like a great driver, and he's not on the greatest equipment. But I mean,
yeah. But also, like, his average finish here in the last three races is 33.7.
Oh, all right. Yeah, he sucks.
So, like, it just
the next driver.
Yeah, McDowell. I really do like Michael McDowell.
You always like Michael McDowell.
I do, but it's more than that this week. He's starting 26th. He's got a couple of top 20s under his belt in the last four races here. His average finish is 20.5. I think he could get himself a top 20, and there you go. You got value, place differential, pretty nice stuff. And beyond that, I'm not really that big of a fan of. I mean, I guess Brendan Poole's all right.
I like Brendan Poole because he's running in the truck series.
Yeah, and he had a pretty decent run at Talladega until he spun himself out there. Yeah.
And, like, the cars are, like, the truck and the Cup series, they'll run completely different. But I do like that he's getting...
getting essentially free practice time.
Yes, exactly.
Anybody else below that, please do not ask me about James Davison in chat. This guy will be running his first Cup race ever. In fact, he was slated to run at Talladega, and the NASCAR was like, wait, this guy's not going to have any practice or qualifying, and he's never run a Cup car. Maybe we shouldn't put him out there with 40 other dudes doing 200 miles an hour. So they bumped him to Pocono, because the worst thing that could happen there is your brakes go out and you hit turn one at 200 miles an hour. So James Davison, don't even worry about him. Not worth it.
What about Timmy Hill, P38? I know it's going to be his sixth straight race starting P38. But it's fewer laps than the last few races. I feel like his equipment just typically isn't meant for, like, finishing races, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look, Timmy Hill in the three similar races that he's run, which includes Pocono and Indianapolis, the two most comparable tracks, he has a top 20 finish to his credit in those three races. Am I saying he's going to do that again? No. God, no. Please do not mistake that. You know who you are, Fantasy Omega.
But he's been a dud the last few races, even at Talladega, where we kind of liked him.
Yeah. Well, mostly because the big one didn't happen, and the 20 cars we expected to not be in the middle there were in the middle. That'll wrap that up. Again, our opinion on some of these guys could change between races, depending on where they're starting and whatnot for Sunday. But we'll be in chat for pretty much the whole weekend because we live there. Playbook should answer any questions you have. Let's have fun. It's not going to be nearly as exciting of a race as, you know, Talladega, but it's still going to be an interesting one. Also, you can spot the "Where's Turn 4?" question mark sign on the outside wall past Turn 3. My favorite sign in all of NASCAR. If we get cautions, it's going to be real entertaining because you're going to see like 7 wide racing.
Nice. All right, Matt. We're keeping this one under an hour. Go us. I'm so proud of us. But best of luck to you and to the FA Nation.
Best of luck, FA Nation.